You're listening to episode 7 of David's Out for a Good Time, a Spotify original podcast. Each week you'll hear from me, David Olshanetsky of theshitneyspears.com.
And me, Naledi Dure, the super fun, sexy co-host.
As we'll discuss everything young people should be talking about or are already talking about. Nothing is off limits. And you know what my favorite off limit topic is?
Relationships.
Your love life. Or lack thereof.
What about it, mate? Shoot your questions.
You're back on Tinder, girl?
Mate, don't even. The thing is, right, I've deleted Tinder like 3 times already, and I'm probably going to delete it for the 4th time. I'm just so bored. Words cannot describe how bored I am. But I don't know, it's all right. Everyone's nuts on it.
Lies and fabrications.
Oh, mate, everyone is a lie. Everyone does fabricate.
I'm talking about you, girl.
Me! I'm telling the truth. I'm so bored. I've got nothing else going on. All my friends, like, have people hitting them up. You are going away with a man. I am doing nothing. I'm doing nothing. So I'm just like, okay, I'll message someone. I'm talking to someone who's, like, normal, relatively normal. Jazz student as well. So he's paying.
Play that sax.
Play it in bed. Play it in the bedroom.
Yikes.
What about you? What have you been saying?
I have had like 4 different incidents involving strangers just on the streets of London where I'm like, oh, okay, so this is going to be traumatic. One literally happened on my way to the studio, which is why I was a couple of minutes late here. These 3 people tried to pay for their meal with fake money. And the 2 of them straight away, as soon as they got their stuff, like, bounced. And then the last guy, while they were still making his order, because he ordered something like custom, like, I don't know, extra mayo or whatever.
No way.
No way to extra mayo.
No, mayo's too much, man. Too many calories.
So while they were doing that, like, the manager was like going through the tills and he saw that there was a fake £20 note. Uh-huh. And everyone else, so I was there for ages as well. Everyone else was paying by like Apple Pay or with their like contactless or just their card. He was the only one we had seen pay with cash, obviously because they were tourists. So mm-hmm. like they just didn't want like them extra fees.
Mm.
Girl. World War 3 broke out in that burger joint.
What happened?
They were like, you gave us fake money. He's like, it's not fake money. Okay, at first I thought that they were just like exaggerating. I saw them hold it up to show him. Boy, that was font 26 sized like lettering. Times New Roman printed on A4 paper.
No.
It was like wet A4 paper.
Really?
Like you could tell it was not really like a £20 note.
Mate, we're moving on with the times, man. Here, we're getting those plastic notes now.
Exactly. So he was like, it wasn't me. And then he would jump into, it's real money. And then it wasn't me. And then he was like jumping between 2 different defense systems. And they were like, well, until we find out who gave it to us, no one's allowed to leave. And they shut the door. I was like, okay, cool. So I'm going to die here.
So how long were you in there for?
Oh, like 10 minutes. And oh. I was like, please, I already paid my contactless, so it wasn't me. Can I go?
She let you out.
Yes, I got to go. But because I had to rush here, I didn't even get to enjoy my chicken burger with, you know, all that deliciousness.
Some of that mayo.
I fucking love mayo.
Mayo is nice. It's a good condiment, but it is the bane of my life. I swear I've added on like 10 extra pounds just because I love mayo with everything.
Mayo is the only condom end that you use.
Stop. You're killing me. David loves making out that I'm a hoe, you know. It's a drag.
Realistic?
Nay, realistic. It's so, like, untrue. I wish people, like, it's literally so untrue. I don't get any, like, nothing.
Listen, literally. Your IG handle is sleeping with no lady.
Mate, after sleeping with sirens, it's a little nod to that band that I used to love.
Maybe sleeping with the band.
David's Out for a Good Time, a Spotify original podcast.
Now, lady, are you proud of our generation?
50-50.
Shady. Just dragging an entire, like, 4 billion.
Mate, we are just so problematic. Like, I only have complaints about our generation.
Well, in 1,000 years, which pieces of our culture, especially popular culture, do you think will be in history books or people have passed down and down and down? You know, because when we look back at, let's say, the 1700s, we don't know every single thing that popped off. We just know the biggest events. But I want to keep this light and bubbly. So let's just focus mostly on pop culture. Mm-hmm. I've broken it down. Music, television, online. Mm. Let's start with music. In 1,000 years, after 97 until 2018, what will we remember from music?
Oh my God, like the rise of drill and the rise of trap. And I think I'll remember that the most.
See, I know drill music is a really big movement right now, but mm-hmm. it's only just happened. In 2011, 2010, people would have thought dubstep would have been a thing that in 1,000 years people would still remember. But that faded after like 2-3 years.
Yeah.
I think a similar thing could happen with drill, especially the way like politics are going about right now.
Mm.
So I don't know if in 1,000 years we'll remember drill or even trap. I think that's too recent of a thing. If I think about music and I think about rap, in 1,000 years, which rapper, especially female rapper, will we remember the most? Even though I love Cardi B the most right now, I don't think she will be the one we remember in 1,000 years.
Nah.
I think maybe Lil' Kim, because her last single that charted was 2006, and we still talk about her today.
Yeah, Lil' Kim,
I think Nicki Minaj has so many records when it comes to charting that historically she'll probably be remembered.
That one song of hers with Drake, Moment for Life.
See, that's like the phrase signature song. Like when you say Beyonce, you think of Crazy in Love or Halo. So I don't know if that's really her signature song. I would have thought Super Bass or Anaconda. Like that's, if someone says Nicki Minaj, that's what you think of first. Ooh. No?
No, I always think of like Bottoms Up with Trey Songz or that Drake song.
No, I always think that their best-selling song is normally the one that people remember the most.
No way.
Like Drake, for example, I think people remember the most Hotline Bling. Do you not think so? Like general public, don't just think about like yourself and your friends. Like the general public in 1,000 years will have passed it down, not just you and your friends. So I think if someone mentioned Drake, they'll first think of Hotline Bling.
Oh my God, no. I would have literally thought of like...
Or Started From the Bottom or...
Motto.
It'll be one of those three. Yeah. It won't be anything like God's Plan or Nice for What.
I agree.
It won't be one of those because those are bangers, but I don't think that they have the long standingness. That's something Started From the Bottom had.
Yeah.
Beyonce for sure will remember it.
All her songs.
No, I think a signature song would be Crazy in Love or Halo. Yeah. I love her recent stuff, but I think those two are the ones that... I was about to start breaking into it, but you know, if you listen to our last episode with Emenike, you know that I'm a bit tone deaf. And if you guessed that I was humming Toxic, good for you. I picked the easiest one. You don't want to play me in the streets when I will have a terrible one. Well, Toxic and Britney, I think that'll be remembered.
Yeah, always.
Or Baby One More Time.
Always. Yeah. Always, yeah.
Spice Girls.
Wannabe.
Exactly. I maybe, yeah.
Is it Live Forever?
You're thinking too niche.
I'm not! But that's the song that everyone seems to like but me.
You don't even have the right title for it, so no.
Oh, sorry.
It's gonna be Wannabe.
Yeah.
Who else is there? Let's think of two more. K-pop as a movement, probably.
Yes.
To be honest, I think when I think of the general public, it'll probably be Psy and Gangnam Style, which is embarrassing, but that's what kicked off the movement. So I think that'll be remembered as the song that started off the K-pop movement was Gangnam Style. What's the last music thing that we can think of? I know there's been always like dance crazes.
Yeah, gonna say that.
I think Soulja Boy.
Yeah.
I think Macarena.
Yeah.
Now watch me whip.
Even Teach Me How to Dougie, that's still, yeah.
They won't be remembered for just the song or the artist. It'll be like the dance.
But if we're looking like way in the future.
I think Soulja Boy would be the most.
Do you think?
Oh no, Macarena. What about Macarena.
What's that dance?
Call Nigel.
No! It's like...
This is a podcast, sis. I'm doing it to you.
Swish. I think that will
the
still...
The flossing.
Yeah.
No, I think that's too recent. The same way I don't think like the shoot dance. I think both those are too recent. But I love a good swish.
What things regarding television will we remember there?
Game of Thrones.
For sure.
So American Horror Story.
Yeah.
Glee.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of like directors that... I think our generation sort of missed out on for various reasons, like Steven Spielberg or Quentin Tarantino, and you just know them by name. I think our generation will pass on Ryan Murphy in that same way.
Yeah.
I think him as a creative, like even movies like Eat, Pray, Love, I think his impact will last a while.
Yeah, for sure. He's an inspiration to a lot of people.
Same with Shonda Rhimes. I don't watch any of her shows, but I know her by name more than any of her shows.
Yeah.
Scandal, Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah.
So I think her as a person, same way Ryan Murphy, I think will pass her down. Especially a black woman, like there's so few black women like showrunners. And she has 3 shows on the same night on the same channel.
Yeah, she's only there.
Cha-ching.
And how long has Grey's Anatomy been going on for? Time. Going on. She's still getting bags.
Law and Order?
No.
I think that was a reach.
Yeah.
It's been on for... Oh, Friends. Simpsons.
Yeah. Simpsons. What about Family Guy? Do you think Family Guy will have the same long-lasting effect as The Simpsons?
No, because it's the same reason. A lot of people criticize Simpsons now because in earlier episodes, the themes and motifs, you can rewatch them today and they feel fresh.
Mm-hmm.
But now some of the episodes they're covering are too specific to today. Mm-hmm. Same with Family Guy. So I think that they're both too, recently have just become too in the moment. Same with South Park even.
Oh, South Park is... I'm all for dirty jokes, but oh my God, South Park is just dry.
Movies. High School Musical.
Yes.
In the same way Grease is remembered.
It will be remembered.
Online. What will you remember from online?
Vine.
I think our specific generation quotes Vines all the time. I think it's too recent.
YouTube, before they started charging people, when YouTube was just, when people just didn't do it for money, when people just actually wanted to put videos up.
Let us know what you think is going to be popping 1,000 years from now. All of our choices were a bit sus. We'll leave it at that. But we definitely want to know what you have, because coming up soon, we have an episode where we're going to respond to all of your comments in the past few episodes, see what you thought of interviews, see if you had different reactions to our advice segment. Keep them coming in.
A Spotify original podcast.
Now, lady, have you ever been in legal trouble?
Never. Oh my God, never. I literally just think to myself, if I ever get arrested, it's game over for me. My mum will just literally
tap
be like,
out.
Literally back to Zimbabwe you go, stupid bitch, for getting arrested, mate. Yeah.
Harsh.
She actually has, she's fully so strict, so like traditional, she would not have any of it.
When Jonathan Schmitz walked onto the set of America's most popular daytime TV show in the 90s, he knew what he was about to meet. It was his secret admirer. What he did not know was that the secret admirer wasn't exactly the person he thought it was. It was on the Jenny Jones Show, and the episode was called Same-Sex Secret Crushes. The episode was never aired, and 3 days later, after it was taped, Schmitz found a love note from the other guest on the show, and then he decided to buy a shotgun. He drove to that guest's house in Michigan and fired twice into the guest's chest, killing him. A jury found Schmitz guilty, not of first-degree murder requiring premeditation, but of second-degree murder. He was released from prison just last year. Schmitz's lawyers argued that he was mentally ill and became emotionally unstable after feeling humiliated. For some gay rights activists, the case remains an example of homophobic legal tactics that persist today, despite efforts to ban it. This is so-called the gay panic defense. Nalady, have you ever heard of it?
No.
Isn't that wild?
So, the guy that came on the show, mm-hmm. straight,
yes.
did not know that it was a same-sex thing. And then his crush messaged him.
Yes, sent him a letter.
Mate, how are you going to kill someone? Oh, man. It's fucked.
Well, all of this returned to headlines in April of this year when a 69-year-old man in Austin, Texas, received a seemingly light sentence of 6 months in jail and 10 years probation for fatally stabbing a 32-year-old neighbor who he alleges came onto him.
Straight men, man. With regards to consent, they only seem to get it when a gay man comes for them. Or supposedly comes for them, then they suddenly understand consent. So this whole thing here is just a little bit mind-boggling. It doesn't matter if someone of the same sex fancies you. It literally doesn't matter. Take it as a compliment. You could be ugly as fuck, for all we know, and someone actually likes you.
Well, 69-year-old James Miller argued that he simply acted in self-defense when he killed his neighbor. The attorney said to NBC News that he was revulsed and repulsed at the sexual approach from his neighbor, and that was the factor for killing. This was followed by just recently yet another case where a personal trainer killed his flatmate after alleging the flatmate tried to flirt with him. All three of these got away with their crimes by alleging the gay panic defense, saying that they only did this because the person was trying to, like, seduce them or lure them. And each time, the judge has approved it as a defense system and said, yeah, you're innocent, or given them a really light sentence.
This just highlights the fragility of men and just understanding consent and how they only seem to get it when a gay person just comes for them. Like, how are you allowed to get away with this, and how is this a rule? It's unfair.
And the big thing is that with the gay panic defense, is if you replace the word gay with, let's say, a race, like the black panic defense, instantly it'd be racism.
Yeah.
The judge would, like, say, fuck off, you're going to jail.
Yeah.
Like, imagine if instead of saying my neighbor was gay and he was trying to flirt with me and that's why I shot him, imagine if he said my neighbor was black and trying to flirt with me and that's why I shot him. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
They would never get
the
away with
fraud.
It. Or even disability. Or you could replace the word gay with anything and straight away it would be rejected. But because it's the word gay, they get away with it.
Yeah, man.
Well, Nalady, what would you do if a woman started flirting with you?
I'd be flattered, mate. I'm flattered when anyone flirts with me. It's a compliment in the end when someone flirts with you. And it doesn't matter if I'm not attracted to them. I'll just be like, hey, thanks. I don't feel the same way, but thank you.
One of the issues as well is that when you see someone on the street, 9 out of 10 times, you automatically assume that they're straight.
Mm.
They don't walk around with a pink star or pink triangle like it would be in Nazi times, saying what sexuality they are. Just, like, you have to guess. And so that's difficult, especially, like, when we talk about, you know, straight people going clubbing.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine, for her friend's birthday, about 10 of them went to a gay club, and all 10 of them were straight girls.
Mm.
So let's say you're a lesbian in this gay club, and there's a group of 10 straight girls. How would you feel?
Kind of feel, like, a little bit played, not gonna lie.
Exactly, because you'd feel like, well, this is my safe space.
Yeah, isn't it?
And you're coming into it. Imagine if you were in a gay club with those 10 straight girls, and you didn't know they were straight, and you walked up, flirted with one of them, and they were like, I'm straight, fuck off, or something. You'd feel like, ooh, mood killed. I'm going to go home now.
Embarrassed, mate.
Exactly. You shouldn't feel embarrassed, especially in one of those spaces.
Yeah, exactly.
I think something that really is great is about our generation is that we're so hyper aware of, like, when shit goes down legally and we don't think that it's right,
yeah,
we spread the word.
Yeah, completely. Just because we have the resources for it now.
Exactly. Social media is incredibly useful when it comes to this. Even, like, legal advice. Like, I know you shouldn't just take advice from anyone that messages you on social media, yeah, but on Twitter, the amount of times I've seen, like, actual lawyers,
yeah,
some of them with blue ticks,
yeah,
messaging people in, like, distress or with issues, saying, here's what you need to do, here's what you need to say. Obviously, I can't physically be there to help you, but I've written out step by step. And also, like, either I have a friend in that city that can help you, or here's a list of, you know, legal help, even free legal help, and you can go into one of those resource centers and they will come with you. It's amazing, because back in the day, you were fucked.
Yeah, I know.
I think our generation is really active about changing the law. Like, one of the reasons I want to bring this up is because right now there's a lot of people who are trying to make sure that going forward, judges aren't able to give such lenient sentences for these crimes. And instead they should be marked as hate crimes, which is what it is at the end of the day.
It is a hate crime, it is. There's nothing else to it. It is a hate crime.
Have you ever felt like someone did, like, a hate crime towards you because you're, like, a black woman?
Nothing mad has happened to me, but I do know other people who have experienced stuff where they've been falsely accused of things and it's actually ended up on their record, and that shit has happened to them purely because of what they look like. I think the law is made to protect a specific group of people, not all people.
What's that group of people, sis?
Straight, white, and rich.
Exactly. And it feels difficult to say that because it is generalizing, but statistics show that they're the ones that get away the most. Well, we want to know your opinion, whether you've experienced hate crime, you've witnessed it, you have some experience with this, like, legal side, or what your thoughts on the gay panic defense is. Make sure to message us at theshootingspears.com and we'll be reacting very shortly. This week, we got a great question from yet another Tumblr anon. They asked us a question we've had before, but I feel it deserves a response because it's not exactly the super same question, it's more just the general topic, which is one of Milady's favorites, relationships.
Oh my god.
The question is, hey David and Milady, I listened to your podcast and had to get in touch and ask your advice on something. So I'm a bisexual woman with a boyfriend. I love my boyfriend and I also loved having sexual experiences with women. My boyfriend and I had a threesome before and it was great, but that's how she spelled it, with multiple U's. Now he's asking to make our threesome situation something more serious, like have another girl around all the time and become polyamorous. As much as I love both sexes, I'm not sure how I feel about this. What do you think? Well, point one, just because you're bisexual and you are attracted to both sexes doesn't mean you have to be with both sexes at the same time.
Yeah.
You can be bisexual and not polyamorous.
Yeah.
That's super girl.
The fact that you're questioning this already is probably, like, a bad sign. But I think because you're asking us, don't go through with it. It doesn't seem like something you're comfortable with either.
The thing is, it's one thing to have a one-off. Mm-hmm. It's another to bring someone in. It's one thing to say to him, like, yeah, we can have threesomes all the time,
yeah,
but, like, I'm still your main boo. I don't want you to have two boos.
Yeah.
You need to, like, sit him down and explain going forward what you want the dynamic to be. It seems, based off the way I read the question, maybe you had a different emotion when you wrote it, but the way I read it, it seems like you're not down,
yeah,
for it to be,
yeah,
a polyamorous relationship.
Mm.
But it seems like you're, like, happy with the threesome part. So I would definitely say, like, if you're happy with just, like, threesomes, make him know, like, yeah, we can keep doing that. I don't want us to, like, find a relationship with another person and, like, make it all the time. Milady, would you ever be in one?
No. The idea of sharing my one and only, my love, my life, is just a no, like, complete no. And I feel like with this anonymous person, she should also explain bisexuality to her boyfriend, because I don't think he really gets it. I don't think he understands, like, yeah, I like both genders, but that doesn't mean I'm gonna
want them around all the time.
Yeah, man.
And I think another thing is, if you really like him, you don't want to be like, yeah, sure, we'll try it. Let's say halfway through you realize this is not for me. You can't just, like, break up with him and say this was a trial run, sorry.
Exactly.
You're probably gonna be the one that taps out and he's gonna keep her.
Yeah,
because she's gonna be already definitely up for a polyamorous relationship since she's the third person to join.
Yeah,
so she already knew you were a couple. So you don't want to be, like, left on the side of the road while he's off with her for the rest of his life. So I think just sit him down and rediscuss your boundaries. And it seems like you're comfortable with, like, hooking up in group situations. So that's get it, girl.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of couples I know that have threesomes, the number one rule is it has to be someone that neither of you, like, will see again.
Yeah, that's what my...
Toot and boot it.
Yeah, I agree to that point. I remember speaking to this girl from work about her relationship. She had a boyfriend, and then she met this guy, and then she just started seeing that second guy, and then she told her boyfriend about him and was like, look, I'm not going to stop seeing this guy. And then in the end, it was a polyamorous relationship, but she liked both of them at the same time and they just had to put up with each other. But then in the end, she broke off the relationship, right, with both of them, but they both still really love her, but they both want her at separate times.
What kind of love triangle, Riverdale realness?
She's so wild, man. She's so free.
I told my man who's not my man, that, like,
I love that phrase. Same, I love that phrase. That's literally like 99% of all my relationships.
My man who's not my man.
Yeah.
He's my man, but I'm not his man.
He doesn't know. Just, yeah, I'm his girl.
So I told him, like, literally, we could fight about anything, you can do anything, like, I will never tap out, we are bound, pinky, like, promise. But the one thing that you could do that would make me tap out and block you and get rid of you would be cheating. Because
yeah.
if you hooked up with anyone else or even asked, if I see a DM saying, hey baby, and you replied, I'm tapping out and I'm taking the dog. Okay, so neither no lady are up for open relationships or threesomes when you're dating someone. Like, we just want that one-on-one connection.
Exactly. But I feel like our generation loves the idea of, yeah, like, multiple.
We are definitely the minority in this.
Yeah.
It's just a coincidence that both of us feel this way.
Yeah.
I believe that you just need to, as we said multiple times already, just sit them down, have the convo, and, you know, really, like, it's an awkward conversation to have, but if you don't have it, then he's just going to think you're, down with it.
Yeah, and don't do that. Like, I know you... Like, in relationships, people tend to want to keep the other person happy in it.
Don't sacrifice your own happiness
exactly.
just to make them happy.
Don't do it, because you'll end up getting hurt in the end, or things will just get really complicated mentally, physically, whatever. It will just all get so complicated. So stick to your guns. You don't want to do it. Tell him that.
You deserve pure, unconditional love. Just be patient.
David's Out for a Good Time, a Spotify original podcast.
Hi, my name is Alexander Goodkind, and my coming out story is when I was in my junior year of high school, I really needed to get an STD test, but I had to ask my mom because I didn't know the first thing about getting an STD test, and I didn't drive either. And so she asked me, why do you need one? And I said, well, because I'm having sex. And she's like, with guys or girls? And I'm like, guys. And she didn't even say anything. She just, like, drove me to the Planned Parenthood and then didn't really speak about it after that. But she is, like, really okay with it. And I guess I'm really privileged to be able to say that, because I know a lot of people have situations where their parents aren't accepting of that. And the song I played a lot during this time was Castles by Halsey. And it definitely brings up some memories around that time of when I was questioning a lot of things and coming to terms with myself.
Thank you so much for submitting your call and come out. We appreciate them so much, because this is probably one of, like, the most intense elements we get. You know, we get advice questions all the time from anonymous users, and that's one thing, but to have your own voice on this show, it's a big thing. Really appreciate it. Don't you know, lady?
We do.
And something so great about this show is our associated Spotify playlist, David's Bops and Bangers. We get this updated every Tuesday, and straight away, your boy hits play. It is so good, filled with so many bops, so many bangers, and this week, we've got quite a list. So, lady, throw it at me.
Okay, so my first song is a classic, Lip Gloss by Lil Mama Man. Do you know it?
Yeah, it's popping.
It's a banger. And my next song is Undercover by Kalani. I saw this live and it was so good, and she had, like, the longest weave on, and she just looked pang, and her voice literally sounds the same in person than it does, like, recorded. So I was like,
it's my favorite Kalani song.
Undercover?
Yeah.
Oh, mate, she has more bangers, you know. More bangers. And then my next song is Sticky by Raven Lanae. She does so much work with Steve Lacy, who's from The Internet, and she's just got a really cool voice and a really cool vibe, and I just think she's slept on, so give her a listen. And then I have All That Glitters by Elle. My friend introduced me to this one, and it's a tune. And then lastly, I have Hit Me Like That Snare featuring Reggie Snow. This is from Alt J's latest release, Reduxa. It's an album featuring reworkings of their songs from their album, Relaxer. Alt J are an indie band from Leeds, repping Yorkshire, and they're just, like, really cool. They basically mix indie music with a little bit of electronic stuff in, and they're a band I've loved for the longest time, and I think they've done really well with Reduxa. The album features talented people such as Little Sims, Pusha T, Danny Brown, Goldlink as well, Goldlink, who I mentioned so much.
but they're just people that I would never think would do a thing with Alt-J, and it's worked out really well. So if you like your music with a little bit of electronic, with a little bit of indiness in, give it a listen.
So David, tell me your bops and bangers.
So my additions to the playlist, David's Bops and Bangers, begins with Without Me by Halsey. It's so good. It samples Cry Me a River by Justin Timberlake.
Mm.
And it's about her breakup with G-Eazy. It happened about 3 months ago, and that's when she recorded. She said she was still on tour, and right after it happened, she recorded because he cheated on her.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're back together. I can't imagine putting out a song now that I'm back with the person the song's about, especially because the song's like message is like, you know what, like, fuck you, I'm not giving you another shot. I made you a better person, and you made treated me like a fool. Yeah, boo-boo the fool, you're back with him.
Maybe it's a song that's like, never forget this shit. You know how girls proper hold on to grudges?
Yeah.
That song is literally a grudge. Don't forget, you cheated on me, bitch.
Stream it and let her know. So the next song I have is No More by 3LW. Do you know who 3LW are?
3LW. They sing, oh God, oh wait. No, I don't.
The half-hearted commitment to that. It was Adrian Bailon from Cheetah Girls.
Oh.
Keely Williams from Cheetah Girls.
Yes, I know who they are!
And I forget the name of the third one, the Michelle of the group.
Yeah!
Who's now in Power, the TV show that 50 Cent produces.
Yes.
And they had three singles, and they already broke up because they were fighting from day one.
Really?
And the reason the Michelle of the group left was because they were having like dinner in a green room one day, and they were fighting, and Keely Williams picked up a bucket of KFC macaroni and cheese and dumped it over her head and told her, fuck you, get out. And that was it.
Oh, no way!
But No More is my favorite. Oh, it's so good. The next song that I picked is 40 Years Old by Casey Lowry. So he's opening for Lanny at the minute. Do you know who Lanny are?
No, but go on.
I love your music knowledge.
I love learning new things. So educate me, man. Educate me. I can't be listening to trap all the time.
So he's only had like three songs come out so far. And he's already opening for Lanny, which I think is crazy because they're such a big band. Like, they're literally going from Coachella straight into like a full European tour. This song is my favorite. He has an EP coming out the same day as this song came out. So I picked it specifically for that reason, just because hype him up.
Mm-hmm.
So do you know Jesse Reyes?
Yeah.
Do you know Normani from Fifth Harmony?
Yes, I do.
Loves her. Do you know Kalani?
Yes, I do.
I like that the hype got bigger with each name. So the three of them jumped on a song together, and it's a remix of one of Jesse Reyes' original songs called Body Count. It's so good. One verse is like, I don't care about your body count, so you shouldn't care about mine. The second verse is, you shouldn't be asking me about my body count. The people in the past are the people in the past. And the third verse is Kalani saying about like, oh, you want to know about my body count? My body count is all girls.
I like that.
Yeah, so it's so cute. And it's quite like big for Normani to be on a song like this.
Yeah.
Because Fifth Harmony isn't like a Disney band, but they were never this over.
Yeah.
And the song is really over.
Mm.
So hype upping this song because it is quite a turn for all three of them.
It's good.
And then the last song I picked is an Italian song, and it's a very specific version. It is from the Festival di San Remo, 1961, which is sort of like the Italian Grammys, and it's a song called Un Uomo Vivo by Gino Paoli. So the reason I picked this song is because, have you heard of the show Skam?
No, I haven't.
So it was a Norwegian show, massively popular, was like the most like illegally pirated show of last year, more than Game of Thrones or anything.
Wow.
Because they tried to sell it to the BBC. BBC said it was too rough and they had too much adult stuff. And so many other countries said the same. But then it blew up and now every single country bought it and is doing their own remake. So season 3 is like the biggest season, and that's what really got the hype train on it.
Yeah.
And it's about a guy coming out and like falling in love with another guy like in the year above him at school. And like, it's about mental health and all these things. But because that season was the most hyped, season 2 in Italy now is using that storyline instead of waiting until season 3. And when they release their trailer, they use this song. And something that's really big in like Skam is you don't just pick a song for the sake of a song. It always lends itself into the story. Like, there's a reason they're using it. So the reason they picked this Italian song. So before I go into it, your boy never learned Italian. No Italian GCC, no Italian A-levels, no Italian after school club. Even Duolingo won't fuck with me. So if I get some of these facts wrong because I had Oomph, one of my friends, translate for me, be mad at them, not me. But the song that I picked, I specifically picked not just because of Skam, but because of the story behind it and around it. Uh-huh. So originally it was written in 1960. And Italy is like really not as progressive as we like to think about it when it comes to homosexuality.
Mm.
And the rumor is that the guy that sang this song wrote it about a guy that he was in love with.
Mm-hmm.
But similar to so many other songs in the 60s that we picked for this show, he just pretended it was about a girl. And as he got older, people kept asking him, being like, oh, is this song about a guy? people like really hounding him. What? Like press, paparazzi, everyone wanting to know what's going on in his personal life. So he was just like a hermit after this song. And one of the last times he performed it was at the Italian version of the Grammys. Mm-hmm. And like that was it. And then he just sort of like faded into obscurity. But the song is so beautiful. And if you go through the lyrics, one, Italian is such a beautiful language. But two, when you actually translate those lyrics to English, again, maybe half those lyrics are wrong according to Google or my friends. It's just like talking about like what it feels like to be a person when their looks no longer matter. And all that matters is that emotional connection. And like the physical stuff does not have to be there at all. All you need is that like mind melt moment of like, we are on the same wavelength. Let's just carry on being on the same wavelength for as long as we can.
That's so cute.
I know, it's so beautiful. It also has the original version on Spotify, but the version you'll see on our David's Bob Singers playlist, which you should be following if you haven't already, Brenda, is the version from the San Remo Festival. We're here with Zyra. Okay, so Zyra, go ahead and intro yourself to the crowd. I want everyone listening at home to know why I picked you to be the guest this week.
Hi, I have no idea. In fact, I didn't realize that you wanted me to be the guest when you messaged me last night. I said, oh, am I going to come watch? I was so excited that you asked me to be here because that's just a massive promotion from where I thought I stood.
Well, I wanted you on because you sort of said this earlier, but I still think it's true. You're sort of like a superhero. You have like an alter ego. So we're not going to go into what your alter ego is because it is a bit of a secret.
It's a bit top secret, yes.
But what's super cool to me is you're a musician, you're Grammy nominated, you have so many amazing songs, but then you're also working in like such a like STEM type of industry at the same time. And like when I was growing up, my parents were always like, it has to be a one or the other kind of thing, but you're someone who sort of has mastered doing both.
I like to apply the one to the other. I think it's all very symbiotic, and I feel like where I've ended up in the city is a fantastic resource because I'm developing proper commercial values. And I can say to people in the music side, hey, I actually know how to, you know, assist you with this process now. And I have all the terminology down, which is really cool. And it will only develop in a good way. My parents are also like that. They're both professionals, sort of ex-city in the 80s in London. That's how they met. And yeah, there was always this pressure to kind of do a very standard thing. And I was very fortunate to have a really good education. So thanks, Mum and Dad. And they were sort of terrified that music was my love from a very early age. And eventually, just by applying everything I learned as I grew up to the music, I managed to become very independent as an artist, which is something I really treasure.
It's kind of like Hannah Montana and Elle Woods and all these characters from these movies, like girl power through and through. You're just expressing it. But was it weird to like go to your coworkers and be like, oh yeah, if you Google me, by the way, something's going to come up.
There's
and
like it's a all these page. Like
Wikipedia.
It's really cool, you know.
Instagram with really cool. Like 200K really cool. Or whatever, and YouTube videos with so many listens, and it's just like Spotify streams. It's just like, was it not a bit weird to like have to explain that to them?
I mean, to be honest, I don't even feel it because it's all happened online. So I'm very blasé. I'm sort of like, oh, and I do this other thing, whatever, man. And they were all just kind of like, what?
Shocked.
Yeah. What is this? It's a bit unusual, but I would never give up one side. I like to do them both in tandem.
Did any of them already know of your music before you went there?
Yeah, some people did. Some people were like, what?
Really?
What is this? Well, because Odessa are quite well known in the US, and I have like a couple of people on my intake. Mm-hmm. So I've actually gone in on the School Leavers program and then sort of found my way up and up and up to do more exciting projects, which is really cool. It's great, actually. And I love that they're super flexible. They're just about the only company in London who I can say, hey, I'm going on tour for 6 months to, and they'll be like, great, see you on the other side. They're really, really good at like looking after people who do more interesting stuff. So
when you like sit down and think, okay, I'm going to put an album out and I'm also working in the city, was it a bit like this is going to be a very big workload for a long period of time? An album isn't an overnight thing.
No, not at all. I mean, I'd kind of not even intended to do it the way that it's worked out. I just was a nightmare to work with. That's the honest version. I was working from about the age of 17. I kind of popped up in music with a bunch of songs as a vocalist. I wrote and I did a bit of garage band. Hooray! So I was always kind of keen on the production, but didn't have any of like the technical skill to pull it all together. Tried to engage with as many collaborators as possible, but ultimately just want to control. I'm really happy with what's coming together. You can literally see on my Instagram over the last 5 weeks, there's this highlight called Music, and the entire album is kind of grown across the start and the end point of that highlight. So, you know, it's all happening right now, kind of as I speak. And I reckon, just, you know, if I do the maths, 6 months is probably how long it's going to take to wrap it up if I don't get ill and fall over.
Come through album cycle.
You know? Yeah. But it's great. No, I have lots of people who are kind of interested in helping me in various ways with it. So,
how many songs are you putting out?
23.
Oh.
23 pop singles, baby.
Yes.
So is this going to be very different than your old? Because your old stuff is very like EDM, dancey. So is this a big change?
It's not that much of a change, which really surprised me. I kind of entered music wanting to make a Motown album because that was my bread and butter as a writer. I love like the 60s and jazz and blues and soul and just all of the great
standards.
The Supremes,
standards. But meet Calvin Harris.
I mean, I always say Flume meets, in terms of the production style, because yeah. Flume, Odessa, all of those guys are kind of who I grew up with.
And
in
your
the
style
industry.
Is so similar. Yeah.
It's like, it's kind of like a cutesy fun version of what the boys do with big Madonna top lines on it.
Yeah.
So, that's very much what I enjoy as a musician. I love pop and icons fascinate me.
And you mentioned Flume. Flume is one of four people I have the biggest crush on, and they all look the same. They all look like they could be cousins. The lady cool. refers to them as like Teen Wolf cast members.
Amazing. There's actually a guy in my office who is like his doppelganger. I'm not even kidding.
Oh, is it when you see him?
I was just like, yeah, no, it is. I won't name names, but it's like ridiculous. Actually, he was the first person I spoke to in music. Bizarrely, I had no idea how anything worked. And I think he released his Disclosure remix, You and Me. And I like downloaded it and I wrote a pop song on it and I sent it to him and I was like, please don't tell me off. Like, I had no idea like what anything meant. He kind of like was like, oh, this is really cool, nice vocals. And just like hit me back on Facebook Messenger. I was like, what?
Oosel into your DMs.
I mean, yeah, no. And like we sort of chatted a bit like earlier on. I haven't spoken to him for ages, actually. It'd be nice to hit him up. That was how the Odessa collaboration came about. Yeah. I literally just like tweeted them a video of me singing a pop song on something that was theirs, that was number one on Hype Machine at the time. You know, I loved them and I saw that. I was like, I'll do it on the new one. Just kind of finessed my way into their like timeline. It was funny because it's never worked like this in terms of putting songs together ever since. They just sent like the instrumental chords, the basic chords for Say My Name and It's Only, and we're like, do your thing. And then like, you know, did it in the afternoon, didn't think much of it, sent it back, and they were like, great, they're both going on the album. I was like, okay, like, cool. And then sort of three, I can't remember how long it took, but there was a bit of a delay between that like day and when the album was released. And yeah, they just took off on the back of Odessa's team.
So when you got nominated for a Grammy for that song, well, Say My Name to them.
So let's just clarify. RAC has the Grammy nom for the remix.
It's a remix,
yeah. But my voice is on it, so I'm kind of...
Exactly.
And I love him.
Without
actually,
your
Andre,
voice, it wouldn't have made it.
Andre and I are good mates, and he is just lovely. I'm so pleased that the following year he won the Grammy.
Yeah.
It was nice that it kind of progressed like that for him.
But how did you actually find out that?
People messaging on Twitter. A couple of like sound engineers I work with, like I had texts from them being like, what? And then friends from LA, like on Twitter, just like other producers and writers were like, dude, this is amazing. I was like, this is crazy.
My favorite thing about that category, best dance recording, is that nowadays it's all people like Jax Jones and Calvin Harris and CB and like really traditional like dance music producers. But like, you know, Britney Spears is only great. Grammy is for best dance recording.
No,
she got it for
way.
Toxic.
No!
That's and like... the other people nominated that year, Kylie Minogue, Jennifer Lopez, like it was all pop songs, but because at the time it was really like R&B, like slow vibes on the chart, that was considered dance. Like that's what they were playing in the clubs.
I mean, you must know about Kathy Dennis then, the writer.
I love
adore
Kathy
her. Okay. she's one of my faves. I just love the whole Toxic like story. It's great.
I love that it samples like a Bollywood song. And I always see like on your story, you're like looking at various samples or like covers. Like there was like a Whitney Houston moment.
Oh my God, I'm still going to release that. That's fully just like on the pipeline, just like slightly later on. As soon as I've finished my actual album, I'm going to have a load of fun and do some like more random stuff. And actually I'm so naughty. I end up doing those kind of at the same time anyway. So expect some like funny covers. Maybe I'll just like make a bunch of like Zyra production, but like four songs, like How Will I Know, Whitney Houston, you know,
just like, because so many of those songs from the 80s and stuff, it'd be so, because lyrically, they're timeless.
Within the modern production that I'm trying to make, I'm still making it as pop as I can. in the hope that it lasts. Do you know what I mean? In the hope that it ages well, effectively.
So in two categories, from a vocalist category, what DJs or producers would you love to work with? And from, you know, a producer category, what vocalist would you love to work with?
Oh my God, that is such a difficult
like,
question.
Like, no limits. Like, literally, you could ring them up right now and they'd be like, yeah, sure, I'll be in the studio.
Oh God. I mean, they're just people who fascinate me, who have their own legacies. You know, to be able to ring up Max and just be like, yo, let's just hang out. I mean, I've never come into contact. I nearly did. Through like a couple of other people, but like
through hunting outside his house in Sweden.
I was there in the bushes.
Yeah.
So just kind of, you know, titans in terms of their talent in the area. Mm-hmm. Anyone like that. Gosh, I didn't actually think about this question before I came in. Oh, who would be some of a Lorde. Lorde fascinates me. I think she's just sort of a creature of the night.
My favorite.
She's lovely.
So when her Pure Heroine, when that came out, none of it really like vibed with me. Like I didn't really scout out her music until right after I turned 18. Like the second club I ever went to was Coco. And like as we walked in, they started playing. It was a remix of Magnets. So it was a Disclosure featuring Lorde, but it was like a remix of that. And I just remember being like, her voice is so like over this beat. I didn't even realize it was Lorde. At the time, it was so different to her style. Yeah. Like, I think my favorite dance track of 2018 so far is The Middle with Maren Morris.
Oh, her, yeah, she Maren saved them. Do you know the backstory?
I love that backstory okay.
No,
so
tell
much.
The backstory. I don't know this.
Okay, go for it.
So, originally the song was written by an Australian writer called Sarah Ahrens. And they just did it as like a songwriting, like, let's send it out to some people. Because Sarah Ahrens has some sort of like autoimmune. Her label knew, let's give this to someone bigger. Course. Who can actually go out and make this number one. Because that, it was sort of shitty, but at least they can really push this as far as we can versus you, because this is when she was just sort of diagnosed. Like, we don't know how you can handle this song on top of tour and everything.
Didn't know that. That's really cool.
And so then they sent it to, not Zed, who is the other person featured on? Gray.
Gray do some bits and pieces with Zed.
Yeah, so they sent it to Gray, and they were really happy with the song. They then sent it to Zed, and that's where all like struggle for the song. That's where the story comes from. The songwriting and the production was sort of done. It was who's gonna sing it, who can do it. They first went to Demi Lovato. Demi Lovato said, "Yeah, sure." This is like early 2017.
So when she would have been cutting like stuff like "Sorry," kind of.
Keep in mind, she also did the song with Jax Jones at the same time, Instruction.
Yeah.
So she already had a dance song out.
Yeah.
And they didn't want two dance singles back to back, especially because her team decided, let's go with Sorry Not Sorry next, because it's so different to Instruction that it'll start this album cycle in a fresh way without having it associated with this Jax Jones track, which wasn't doing amazing in the States. So Demi Lovato pulls out. Camila Cabello comes in. Camila Cabello says, I love this song. Her team loved the song. Her previous songs, which was Crying in the Club and I Have Questions, underperformed by her label's expectations.
Ah, that was pre-Havana, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they decided, let's do Havana instead. And so then she pulled out. And the team was like, whatever, like, Havana's going to flop. She made such a bad decision. Cut to Havana going number one.
Yeah, right?
Zed now is involved, and he's like, we are finding a singer. He mails it out to every single person he knows. Yeah. So 14 people receive the song. 14 people cut demos.
Yeah.
They've never explicitly said who it was, but it's pretty easy, because in the New York Times documentary, you can hear the vocals. Anne-Marie's done it, Tove Lo, Charlie
X. Yeah, this gets mentioned in the blog post.
Carly Rae Jepsen, Brishap Biggs, so many people. Anne-Marie was the one they decided to go with because her voice was the most similar to Sarah's. Anne-Marie's version was finalized. They did the album artwork for it. Someone calls up Zed and he's like, you know she has a song with Marshmello coming out like that same week and they've already shot the video? Which is Friends.
Sometimes
so they call up the team saying, hey, you know we're doing this song. She's doing it basically a similar song with Marshmello, who's like a rival. He's on another label. She's on the same one as Marshmello. So if they're going to prioritize anything on the radio, it's going to be her feature with Marshmello. So they pull Anne-Marie off the track and Anne-Marie's team does the same.
This is long, man. What a long process.
And they are like, we have no one left. We have 14 demos and Anne-Marie's was the best. We're not going to give the song to someone who did a worse version, like drag Carly Rae a bit. And the label was like, we literally have X amount of budget and we need it out for this period or else it's going to be outdated. Cut to someone saying, what about Maren Morris?
She's a country singer.
Yeah. Like Anne-Marie, Camila Cabello, Demi
Lovato. But I love it. And her voice is amazing.
Maren Morris is like early Taylor Swift, like Taylor Swift circa You Belong With Me country singer.
No.
Such a good voice. Does The Middle, which is like dance banger. And it's such a bop. It's a bop and a banger at the same time. It does so well. I don't think it ever went to number one, but it was definitely doing so well on charts. Clubs were playing it nonstop. And I love it so much.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry.
I like that.
Yeah.
The struggle.
The struggle is real. I mean, someone give Carly Rae a break. She should have got that
that's
song.
That's very commonplace in the world of, like, you know, publishing and writing and trying to get people's schedules to line up. Like, I have some, stories I cannot tell.
So thank you so much for coming on, Zaira.
No worries.
Be back after this with Cal McSwiggan.
A Spotify original podcast.
We are now joined by Cal McSwiggan on David's Out for a Good Time. Thank you so much for coming on my show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
I'm just so excited to have you on because, like, one of my first experiences doing, like, radio was going on your show. And you've been doing that for so long now, and you're just so good at it.
Oh, thank you, David. You're so kind. It was a pleasure to have you on my show because you were the youngest guest we'd ever had on there. You're so passionate about the LGBT plus community, for instance, and you have so, so much to say, and it's really refreshing to see and hear somebody who has that kind of passion at such a young age.
I just did the Anthony hand-to-heart thing. It's my favorite. So most people's favorite section on their iPhone is, like, their favorite photos of them or their friends, like, so they can send later. My favorite section is just memes I know I'm going to use over and over and over again. And my favorite one to use is, there's a photo of Anthony Porofsky from Queer Eye where he has his head, both of his hands crossed over his heart, and he looks so affectionate. And I send that to everyone if they say anything nice.
I feel like it's a real skill, you know, going out into the internet and curating GIFs and memes and then saving them for the opportune moment. I feel like it's a real talent.
My three go-tos at the minute are Anthony hand to heart. My second is a Photoshop photo of Katy Perry when she was on her Witness Worldwide, like, Big Brother style thing, like 24 hours filming. So I always use that when I'm tired or just not having a great day.
Beautiful.
And then my last one is a very similar Photoshop photo of Mayhem Miller from RuPaul's Drag Race when she was crying because she was sent home, and it was Photoshopped, so just her eyes are size 50 and the teardrops. I said that all the time.
I know which one you mean.
What are your go-to memes at the minute?
I actually really like kind of using, like, X-rated ones out of context.
Got it.
So, you know, things from adult film, but they're cropped so you can't see the adult parts there.
Yeah, I know which ones you're talking about.
Those are my favorite go-tos.
Yeah.
Absolutely love.
So the difference, I feel like, between the way we both started on the internet was I literally had computer classes from, like, age 3, like kindergarten. We were already
playing,
like, Clifford the Big Red Dog. When did you, like, have your first computer class?
It's very early on, you know.
That literally blows my mind, though. And you're really exposing my age here because I didn't have, like, any kind of IT or computer classes until I was about 14 years old. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I touched a computer until I was around maybe 9. So, like, to grow up with the internet and with technology, it's so... I can't relate. I literally cannot relate.
I thought I started on the internet early, but I didn't really have a Facebook until 12. What about you?
Yeah, it's
like, around that.
Okay, yeah. I need you to stop. You make me feel so old.
But what I'm trying to say is there's people now that have, like, Instagrams that are, like, 7 years old.
I know.
And it's scary because I feel like such a parent because I've always been, like, a very, like, liberal, like, do whatever you want type of person. But I'm like, control your children. Your 7 year old doesn't Your 7 year old is not to be, like, commenting on, like, Shawn Mendes's photos with, like, dirty emojis. Like, it's heavy.
There are kids in my brother's primary school who already have iPhones. So it's like, man.
I understand having a phone.
Yeah.
But that's an iPhone.
If I was a parent, I would 100%, does not matter how, like, if my kid is old enough to be in, like, a school, somewhere they're not with me with them, I would give them a phone just so if there's an emergency, you can use me. But it'd be like a brick.
A Nokia 3310.
So they can call me and call the police and that's all they need.
Yeah, absolutely.
I understand giving them a phone. I got my first phone, which wasn't an iPhone. It was a Samsung, but it was like a touchscreen, looked just like an iPhone. Mm-hmm. But I remember a girl in my year had an iPhone. So she had the first generation iPhone when they first came out. And, like, what is she going to use? The calculator app in class and that's it.
Literally.
Angry Birds wasn't even out then.
Not even everyone had a number then. Do you know what I mean? It would still be like, oh, let me knock on your door.
I have the same phone number since then because I love my phone number so much. I'm not saying it, but just know I have a popping phone number.
Do you guys remember the days where you would just show up at your friend's house and knock on the door? You wouldn't
text. Oh, no, yeah. I think we were, like, the last generation to have that.
If somebody showed up at my house and just knocked on the door now, I'd be like, are you crazy?
I know. It'd literally be like, I'm busy. Like,
I miss being able to just pop off and do whatever I wanted.
Because we're at each other's fingertips all the time now. And I don't know, sometimes I wonder if, like, it takes something away from childhood, not having that. And, oh my God, so I had a friend who has a kid, mm-hmm. and her kid is, like, 7 years old, mm-hmm. and the kid starts commenting on my Instagrams. And I was like, I was like, this is not appropriate. So, like, I had to have, like, a FaceTime with her child to explain why he can't follow me. But he was like, oh, I've watched some of your videos as well. And I'm like, oh God, I talk about sex education and all sorts. And I was just like, I do not feel comfortable with this 7-year-old.
Oh.
accessing all that.
Yeah, I don't think the internet did anything sketchy to me growing up. But I know that there was definitely kids in my year that were like on Omegle or like chat roulette at like a really young age. Mm-hmm. I think that there was like a girl that like met a guy from Craigslist and then she decided she was going to move to Birmingham to be with him. And then she just vanished for like a month.
Oh my God.
And I remember all of us were asking the teachers like, what's happening? And teachers were like, her parents, like we call them, they say that she's fine. So we don't know the full story, but she just vanished for a month to be with this guy from Craigslist in like year eight. And then she came back after a month and we were all like, what happened? And she was like, oh, it just didn't work out.
Oh what?
Who says it doesn't work out about a relationship in year eight after moving to Birmingham to be with them?
I had like a terrifying like catfishing story, and I wasn't even a child. I was like 21, 22 when this happened to me, and I like started chatting to this guy online and I was like really digging him, and he was like, hey, come to Birmingham to meet me. And I was like, yeah, okay, sounds good. And we set up like a date and he was like, where do you want to meet? And he sends me a location. It was literally this like abandoned warehouse in the middle of nowhere.
Ooh, sis, you're in danger.
And I was like, this is a bit sketchy. And I started talking to my friend and she was like, yeah, you need to like check him out. So I did the like reverse Google image thing.
Yeah.
And it turned out he was like using these pictures of this model. And I was like, what would have happened if I'd gone to this warehouse in the middle of nowhere?
I like that you know your self-worth and value, though, because if like someone that looked like a model messaged me, I don't care if they're a catfish or not, I will automatically assume they're a catfish.
Oh, okay.
Like someone be like, hey, what's up? I'm like, sorry, I can't talk to you, you're a catfish. They could just be like, their emoticon could literally just be like of a cat. I'm like, sorry, I know you're not real. Who's interested in talking to me? I think we're really lucky, and you know, you do so well on YouTube, and you know, I wouldn't have this show if it wasn't for my background in Tumblr, and you know, Naledi wouldn't have half the dates she has without Tinder.
Oh my gosh, you know what? I deleted that Tinder is shit. PSA.
So like, so much of our lives are just like coming from this like online background.
Yeah.
Do you think it's weird that like so much of the opportunities you have today come from YouTube?
I kind of do. Like sometimes when I step out into the real world, I almost have that kind of imposter syndrome feeling because so much of what I do is done by myself at home and I'm not, you know, directly working with other people. Mm-hmm. And then I go out there into the world and all these people suddenly really value what I do. And it does make you feel almost like I'm a fraud. And I'm always second guessing myself, like, is what I'm doing actually valid, you know? And then, but then I see other people doing incredible things and I see the impact it's having. I'm like, oh, it's amazing what they're doing, but it's hard to kind of internalize that and it's hard to have that appreciation for your own work.
I think the embarrassing thing for me when it comes to talking about like online is that if I meet someone or I'm networking and I have to say what I do, it would be so much easier if I could just say, oh, I work with Spotify, and then just end it there. But it's like, that's not all it is. And then if they want to like prod further, then there's the whole story. But some people are so good at it. Like, I remember you took me to a Eurovision party at another YouTuber's house. And there's a YouTuber there that's really ridiculously successful.
Yeah.
I don't know how many million people watch her videos. I don't actually watch her videos, not to like drag her, but I just know she does really well.
Yeah.
Because I remember I was in the background of one of her like Snapchat stories and I had five different people message me like, why are you with so-and-so? Like, that's how big she was. Because I knew she did YouTube, I didn't really know what she does on it. I was like, oh, so what do you do? And straight away she goes, so I do YouTube videos, I'm a musician, I'm an author, I have a tour coming out.
Wow.
And she just like went straight into it and had no like embarrassment and no, she knew, maybe she just rehearsed enough times so she knows what she has to say. But that's how I want to be. Like, I want to be able to just say, oh, I do this and this and this. Yeah. She was so comfortable with it and so secure in it.
She probably has practiced that. Like, I have my little elevator pitch, which is
elevator
practiced
pitch,
as well. It's like, I'm a writer, radio presenter and LGBT+ lifestyle blogger.
That's exactly like, she just
and then I can elaborate.
Thing. Yeah. I didn't ask her to elaborate because she wasn't that interesting, but
like, yeah, you just practice it. And but I feel like as well, I never go in with YouTube because I feel like there's a lot of people
she
out there.
She started with YouTube.
They're very much like, oh, you do YouTube. I think there should be a little bit more respect for, you know, people who do more things online. I often speak to brands and things and, you know, in some of my past charity work, for instance, they would always much rather work with a celebrity, even if they were on like The Apprentice 9 years ago or something.
Oh my God.
They would rather work with somebody like that than with somebody who has a million subscribers on YouTube, because they just, it's like they've not quite come around to internet talent yet. It's like they don't quite believe it's a thing yet and they don't really recognize the impact it can have.
And it's like people on the internet have a lot of following and I feel like they really disregard that.
Well, I'm often like, if I'm talking about like a new LGBT+ movie or book or something, sometimes I kind of have that niggling thought in the back of my head saying, is anyone actually going to listen to you? Is actually anyone actually going to go and read this or watch this movie? And then I'll be scrolling through my Instagram and I'll see somebody else talking about a movie or something. And I'll be straight there at the cinema, like, I need to see this movie right now. I need to read this book. So, you know, it does work.
Yeah.
I remember I had a meeting with a woman who is a manager at like the biggest like go-to talent firm for like digital stars. Like, she handles the biggest, as far as I'm aware, British female YouTuber. And she was like, oh yeah, I don't like saying the word influencers. I like saying the word digital first talent. Mm-hmm. And it's because all the people I work with, they're not just YouTubers. That's not their thing. If they were just a YouTuber, I wouldn't sign them. They all use their following on YouTube to do what they actually want to be doing, be it fashion design, be it sports, be it music. They just use that as their launch pad. And I think that's so smart. Yeah. And I think that's the thing that a lot of younger people today don't really get. And that's not to say you have to go back to traditional media. If we're being honest, there's like one YouTuber on a reality show in the UK per year, and same in the States, like that will do Strictly or will do I'm a Celeb or something like that. So it's not about having to go back to traditional media. It's about just having the knowledge that you can put your stuff out there. Like Trisha Paytas, for example, who I love. Mm. She's bawling. Everything she does is still online. It's just she's smart enough to know that it's not just YouTube. She has all these other platforms that she is working on, but she knows that she wants to stay in that digital sphere. So that's not to say that you have to go work in these traditional fashion design or music industries. In fact, I actually hate it when a lot of like YouTubers just come out with like a single. You don't have to do music.
Yeah.
I kind of see it as like self-made talent a lot of the time. You know, there's people out there, and if they want to be a writer, that instead of waiting for somebody to give them a book deal, they're going to go, well, no, I'm going to start writing my own blog and I'm going to start doing it myself without somebody else's permission.
Yeah.
If I want to be a filmmaker, I'm going to start making little films and putting them on YouTube. If I want to be a musician, I'm going to start recording myself and uploading that. It's people not waiting around for other people to give them permission to follow their dreams. It's people taking it, putting the power back into their own hands. And I think that's something that we should be celebrating rather than looking down our noses at. I think we have a tendency to look down our noses at these people who are putting themselves out there online and seeing them as attention seekers, whereas really they're just trying to, they're pursuing their dreams.
And it's interesting how we pick and choose who we see as online talent, because you never see people still refer to Justin Bieber as a YouTuber, but he started on YouTube.
Yeah.
You don't see people talking about Halsey as that Tumblr girl, but she started on Tumblr. It's all these people.
Jessie J was MySpace, I think.
Ooh, drag her age. But that's what I'm saying. Like, it feels like at a certain point, people just stop referring to them as where they started.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of like YouTubers and stuff that.
Well, Troye Sivan, I think, is an amazing example of
this. Oh, yeah. Oh, see, I didn't even. I completely forgot.
Nobody sees him as a YouTuber anymore. And that.
Well, yeah, update your channel, girl.
I still do.
But yeah, so. I love saying, but yeah, so. What else do you have going on there? So we've discussed digital first talent. So tell us, plug, go.
Writing is my, I mean, this has always been my dream. You know, I went to university to study creative writing. I've throughout my entire career.
The lady looks like that's her same degree.
Samesies.
Cool.
You know, it's always been my passion. I've always, you know, my original LGBT plus activism didn't actually start on YouTube. It was me, you know, writing articles and things for small newspapers, small magazines. So right now I'm working on my first book, which is so unbelievably exciting. You know, I feel like this is
fiction.
What my, no, it's actually nonfiction. It tells the story of the 2 years I spent traveling, but it does that by celebrating LGBT plus queer stories.
Yes.
So each section of the book is a different country, and it focuses on another queer person's story. So, you know, you have this amazing transgender person in Bangkok who I befriended, and then you have this I went to live with an Italian family in Italy, and the 17-year-old boy was closeted and his dad was really homophobic, and it was kind of, you know, meeting all these wonderful LGBT plus people, and it's telling my story through their stories.
Do you have a title yet?
I feel like my brand online has always been Eat Gay Love, you know, ripping off Eat Pray Love.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my working title, but I don't know, I feel like there's maybe some copyright issues there.
Well, I think, go for it, sis.
I like
Give it
that.
A go.
I really like that.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
Yeah, or worst case scenario, the last chapter, which is like an epilogue, could be Eat Gay Love.
I feel like Eat Gay Love has slightly sexual tendencies that I don't intend, though, like, because like my email address has always had Eat Gay Love in it. And you know, like when you're in like Top Man and they ask for your email address for your receipt, and I say it to them and they kind of look at me like,
relate, online shopper.
Okay, fair. You're just an internet baby, you just want to stay in your little internet bubble, and that's okay. Okay, it's allowed.
I'm just Trisha Paytas. I just want to stay in bed all day, order food, and not have to do anything. I love her lifestyle. Her videos, like, everyone always makes fun of her. I think it's goals. Like, I know she has quite a few meltdowns, but I will deal with a few meltdowns a month in exchange for a pink G-Wagon and trips to Mykonos.
Yeah, I'm in. Sounds great.
Thank you so much for coming on. I'm really excited to read your book.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed listening to David's Out for a Good Time, a Spotify original podcast.